Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Thanks for listening to Unchained, your no-hype resource for all things crypto, on the CoinDesk Podcast Network. You can also listen to the episodes on the Unchained feed earlier if you subscribe there. Plus, check out all our content on our website, unchainedcrypto.com.
The Runes Protocol is the hottest thing since Ordinals itself. So, you know, if you were under a rock this past year on Bitcoin, Bitcoin kind of sprung to life. All of a sudden, people are putting JPEGs on Bitcoin and now fungible tokens on Bitcoin. And the creator of the Ordinal theory, Casey Rottamore, threw out last September, this idea for a different token standard called Runes on Bitcoin, just in a blog post. The degens, the people loved it. They demanded he build it, so he did.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Unchained, your no-hype resource for all things crypto. I'm your host, Laura Shin, author of The Cryptopians. I started covering crypto 8 years ago, and as a senior editor at Forbes, was the first mainstream media reporter to cover cryptocurrency full-time. This is the April 19th, 2024 episode of Unchained. With iTrust Capital, you can buy and sell crypto in a tax-advantaged retirement account. Enjoy significant tax advantages, 24/7 access, and the industry's lowest fees. Polkadot is the original and leading Layer 0 blockchain with over 2,000-plus developers. And the Polkadot 2.0 upgrade will be a massive accelerator for the ecosystem. Join the community at polkadot.network/ecosystem/community. Today's guest is Charlie Spears, co-founder of Walkspace Media. Welcome, Charlie.
Hey, glad to be here, Laura Shin. I've been listening to you for a long time, and it's kind of crazy to be on the show.
Excited to have you here. This is the week of the Bitcoin halving, which currently looks like it will happen Friday evening, East Coast time, though it will be past midnight on the 20th UTC time, meaning 4:20. We will use that for the history books. So this event obviously is a major event that happens roughly every 4 years in Bitcoin. However, this year, there's another event that people are talking about quite a bit, which is the launch of the Runes Protocol, which is on Bitcoin. So what is the Runes Protocol?
The Runes Protocol is the hottest thing since Ordinals itself. So, you know, if you were under a rock this past year on Bitcoin, Bitcoin kind of sprung to life. All of a sudden, people are putting JPEGs on Bitcoin and now fungible tokens on Bitcoin. And the creator of the Ordinal theory, Casey Rottamore, threw out last September this idea for a different token standard called Runes on Bitcoin, just in a blog post. The degens, the people loved it. They demanded he build it, so he did. And he implemented Runes as a protocol into the same client that he implemented Ordinal Theory. And this Runes protocol is hard-coded to begin block 840,000, which is the halving, which I believe if this airs today, is very soon. So what are Runes? Runes, in contrast to the popular BRC20 token standard, BRC20s fit into an inscription that's like the blob of data that might be a JPEG or JSON. Runes, in contrast to being this fungible token messaging protocol like BRC20, is a similar messaging protocol where you create a transaction on Bitcoin. It says the operations that you want to perform according to the Runes protocol in that transaction in the op return, and it messages to an off-chain indexer to track token state. That might be a bit of a mouthful, might be a bit jumping in the deep end, but basically it maps really well onto the way Bitcoin already works. Bitcoin has a UTXO model instead of an account model, kind of like Ethereum.
Right, which stands for unspent transaction output.
Yeah, unspent transaction output. And so these outputs can contain other outputs called op returns, which include the message that says, Charlie sends Lara a rune. And I'll stop there. And that's just the high level idea of what it is.
Yeah. And just to clarify for people, when you talk about how it's a messaging protocol, what that means is it's not, you know, like if you think of something similar in Ethereum that might be created by a smart contract, or in the past, there have been new things added to Bitcoin that maybe require a hard fork or even a soft fork. But this, as you said, is just a messaging protocol. It's added in, it runs on this, ordinals theory, I guess, that was already created last year.
I'll actually point that it doesn't run on ordinal theory. It's just implemented in the same client that runs ordinal theory. So it naturally works with it, but it doesn't use ordinal theory. So that's kind of right. Where the confusion can happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I misspoke there. Because ordinals uses sats, which, you know, is like counting the Satoshis in mm-hmm. every block. But this doesn't use that. It's more purely based on the messages.
Yeah. And yeah, so you can include this message, this data in a Bitcoin transaction. And Runes very simply just includes the data in a more like intuitive way for Bitcoin. When these unspent transaction outputs are created and destroyed as Bitcoins are sent back and forth, so are too the Runes messages. So a rune will exist on a UTXO, and you'll send that UTXO to someone else, and then the Runes protocol will see that your rune is on that UTXO now. It's pretty simple, and it has some really cool long-term like extensibility or implications.
Yeah, and let's also differentiate it from BRC20s. I believe that the intention of the Runes protocol was actually to fix some of the issues with BRC20s. In terms of, you know, what was not ideal about that. So can you explain the difference and what problems this standard fixes?
Yeah, so it's funny because I was one of the first people to really talk about BRC20 and kind of a notable early critic, more as a technical critic, because it is a comically dumb way to do fungible tokens. But that doesn't mean that that's not the way everybody wants to do it. The market clearly found these things attractive. And the market found BRC20 is very attractive because of its like fair mint mechanic. It's intuitive what the BRC20 is doing, how to mint it, and the idea that like the person who creates the token doesn't also necessarily get all the tokens. So BRC20s, again, a messaging protocol, but you create an inscription. So you have the ordinal theory, which tracks the Satoshis. And the Satoshis are associated with a data blob on Bitcoin that we call an inscription. And Casey, the guy who invented ordinal theory, imagined that people put images in there. But lo and behold, before you knew it, the degens were putting in text or JSON, which says this is the message for the fungible token protocol. And the first one that really dominated the narrative was BRC20, where BRC20 says, we're going to create these inscriptions. We're going to say, put the protocol message in it. And that's how we do it. Now, what happens is, you know, after you create this protocol message, a mint or a transfer or a deploy inscription, that inscription becomes useless afterwards. And it has some very objectively negative drag on Bitcoin itself. It proliferates what's called the number of unspent transaction outputs. These outputs have to be stored on your Bitcoin node. And the more of them there are, the harder it is to run a Bitcoin node. This has been kind of the conversation of, you know, data in general in Bitcoin. But this is one where like all these messages get stored, and they get stored in like dust amounts, like the smallest unit of a Bitcoin that people really can meaningfully use and transact with. And it just is very inefficient. it causes users to overspend really inefficiently, and for node operators on Bitcoin to just start to get a little nervous about the trajectory of how many UTXOs are on Bitcoin. So Runes solves some of that. It doesn't solve the issue that it's an off-chain indexed protocol, but it does say we're going to reduce the amount of UTXO proliferation. This is objectively better at a protocol standpoint for Bitcoin as a network and nodes. And then it actually makes it a little bit more efficient because people aren't stuck with little bits of Bitcoin just hanging around, which is hard to re-merge into a useful chunk of Bitcoin. And that's pretty important. I also think it's not understood well enough that how kind of janky BRC20 as a protocol has been this past year. If you've been in our world of ordinals, there's been issues with protocol definitions, the indexer wars, the public and private interest, and it's been this just chaotic story. And I'm happy to see we've emerged out of it and we're in a pretty good place for BRC20 right now. But Casey spent a lot of time heads down implementing and defining how Runes works so that when block 840,000 hits here in maybe a matter of hours by the time you hear this, the protocol is pretty well defined and people can just start using it. That's pretty big from a protocol launch perspective in contrast to BRC20.
And then, so in addition to solving some issues with BRC20s, I think that there are additional features to Runes that BRC20s don't have. What are those?
Yeah, there's a lot of features. One is because Runes are implemented in the same client that Casey and Raf are building, which tracks the Satoshis with ordinal theory, the ORD client it's called, because they're actually the same people building both things, they can kind of cross the streams a bit. So one of the fun things is you could theoretically, I don't know if this is going to be implemented early in live, but you can in one of the inscriptions, one of those JPEGs that we use track with ordinal theory, you could theoretically reference the balance of runes that are on the output of that inscription or the address of that inscription. This is really interesting because it basically synergizes the very things the degens really, really want. They really want to trade all of these different types of assets. And it allows for some fun gamification. Then there's also a lot of interesting things where one of the challenges is Bitcoin's base fees are getting more expensive. This is a good thing. But at some point, it's just uneconomic to transact fungible tokens on the base layer in the way that they're currently designed. So when we look at Runes and its structure as a UTXO-based fungible token protocol, it actually lends itself to extending onto what we call layer twos because it's much more natural. You don't have to do the same kind of weird Rube Goldberg machine of locking them up in some kind of box, but it rather may function more like the Lightning Network where you can do, hash time locks or other types of UTXO locking to extend that to layer twos. So I think that's a really interesting thing and allows for a lot of scaling off chain.
All right. So in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about the impacts of runes on Bitcoin. But first, a quick word from the sponsors who make this show possible. Polkadot is the original and largest layer zero blockchain with over 2,000 plus developers. The anticipated Polkadot 2.0 upgrade will be a massive accelerator for the ecosystem, upgrading the infrastructure with 8 times higher transaction throughput and twice as fast block times, tailored core time for the needs of every protocol, trustless bridges to multiple chains, and revised tokenomics with a token burn to reduce inflation. Perfect for GameFi and DeFi to build, grow, and scale. Get your Web3 ideas to market fast. Think big, build bigger with Polkadot. Join the community at polkadot.network/ecosystem/community. Back to my conversation with Charlie. So you kind of alluded to this earlier, but obviously something that we have seen with ordinals and BRC20s, I think, is that they have greatly affected the amount of data stored in a block, competition to get into a block, fees. So what do you think the impact of runes will be in terms of, you know, the data in blocks?
That is the golden question. That's what everybody wants to know. Certainly, it's going to create a burst of demand after the halving. There is this looming event where we all know that at block 840,000, this thing goes live. So everyone's going to be rushing in to try to create their runes token and then mint out that token. So the ecosystem is in kind of a frenzy right now with people trying to scramble to build tooling last minute, integrate into their marketplaces. And so that means that the rails are being built and probably exist for a lot of people to speculate in kind of a burst event shortly after the halving on all this, on these fungible tokens. And that is transaction demand. That's block space demand. This means that fees are going to go high right after the halving. The question then becomes, what happens like long term? Does this mania die down? Is it cyclical? I can't imagine that it doesn't have a cyclical personality to it of up and down, but this will just mean we have another type of transaction behavior on Bitcoin. Bitcoin's block space gets more dynamic from a fee standpoint when you no longer have people all making the same type of like daily cost average, you know, transactions on Bitcoin, and you have like different cohorts of actors all wanting, some people want to just DCA every day. Some people want to, you know, open Lightning channels. Some people want to do fungible tokens. Some people want to put JPEGs on there. This creates a very compelling dynamism to Bitcoin's block space, which is ultimately good. And it allows, you know, everybody from developers to miners themselves lean into, I think, expanding Bitcoin's block space use. This is great for Bitcoin mining. We're headed into a halving, and halving has historically been a culling time for the mining industry, where miners, their margins get compressed or go negative, and it becomes a game of survival. This halving is different. The mining industry is quite profitable right now, and the fees will make it even more profitable. So we could see, maybe for the first time in my career as a multi-year-long Bitcoin miner, we could see the mining industry not have the same kind of culling event as it has been, or maybe not as significant. So this is great from a long-term Bitcoin thesis standpoint, that Bitcoin is finally maturing into a dynamic block space demanded blockchain.
Yeah, I find this intersection between these two events, the halving and the launch of runes, to be super interesting. And you did talk about how it's unclear exactly what will happen long term. Like, very obviously, that first block, or the moment of the halving, the 840,000 block height, that will be a very competitive block. But if you were to guess, you know, with your experience in the mining space, how would you expect the launch of runes will interact with the halving, kind of like not just, you know, on that first block, but longer term?
So much of this is dependent upon narrative. We've seen empirically on Bitcoin that the best technical implementation does not mean the most popular implementation. So much of this is driven by narrative. I think that we are in a new era for fees, whether it's driven by runes, BRC20, inscriptions, or something else. So I think we're in a new permanent era of block space price discovery, and maybe this will be driven by runes. I think this year is probably going to have a significant runes narrative to it. It's hard for me to say. I'm famously bad at predicting which fungible token protocols are going to be popular. I right curve everything way too much. So I think if the narrative is able to stay strong for the coming months and maybe even years, runes finds a nice niche as a fun fungible token protocol. I think less important than whether it's runes or something else, right now the attention is on Bitcoin. Everybody and their dog is trying to deploy capital, deploy transactions on Bitcoin and tokens. And these things, I think this is just Pandora's box that's been opened, and many things flew out, some good, some bad. I think it's unclear whether Runes is either. I think it's a little bit of both. I think fees are higher for longer. And the big question now is, will the Bitcoin mempool ever clear? Will we ever clear out all the transactions waiting to be confirmed? We have not cleared the mempool in over a year. This should be the biggest story of Bitcoin. So I'm excited to see it, to see that continue.
Well, what do you think it would take to clear the mempool?
It would require the market totally nuking and everybody losing interest in Bitcoin. So
right now, is it clogged with ordinals, BRC20, and then soon Runes transactions? Is that?
Yeah. Occasionally I'll tweet something like, here's what's going on in the mempool today. Because I get a lot of these questions. It's like, people are like, well, why are fees high today? And it's this weird thing where I have to play this role of analyst and degenerate, because it's like, well, today there was this. So this past week was like, this week it wasn't ordinals or inscriptions or runes. It was some like fork of the RGB standard on Bitcoin that was primarily driven out of Asia. And that is the kind of thing, that's just the new regime we're in going forwards, where it's like some new thing happening on Bitcoin. Many people are going to debate the merits of it. I have a more neutral approach of, this is just demand for Bitcoin and demand for Bitcoin's block space. So I won't make a prediction of whether the mempool will clear, but I think that if the mempool does clear, it coincides with a broader market downturn.
Well, what about all these layer twos that are popping up on Bitcoin? Like, obviously we've had Lightning for a while. And as far as I understand, Runes actually plays pretty well with Lightning. You mentioned that too in the show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's like a new ZK, I don't know if you call it a roll-up, Citraea. There's, build on Bitcoin, BitVM stuff. There's another one called Botanix. There's a bunch. So I don't know if any of those could help clear it.
It's a bit of a chicken and the egg. Like, why would you really expect a layer two to catch on without the base layer Bitcoin itself being in significant demand? So there has to be a reason for users to move off chain or abstract from the Bitcoin base layer. And I think we're there. I believe that generally more use cases, even if they create base layer efficiency, actually result in net new demand for block space. So I actually think if, say, Botanix or, you know, like a state chain or these other multi-sig like layer two schemes, if they take off, they don't actually reduce fee pressure on the base layer. I think they just create net more fee pressure on the base layer. I think there's this new term of like, there's this new way of looking at layer twos that I've seen proposed, which is you can look at it from a technical sense, but there's also this like economic argument that maybe we consider things which pay fees or generate transaction fees on the base layer to be some kind of Bitcoin layer or layer two. I think that's an interesting way of looking at it from an analyst standpoint of, we want more economic actors on Bitcoin, even if they create efficiency in moving off chain. I think long term, that only makes Bitcoin more valuable on the base layer.
Huh. Okay. Well, let's actually just very briefly round up also, because I think there's a lot of really interesting things that people can do with runes. You wrote about some of these in a guest post for Dan Held's site, where you talked about potentially someone wanting to buy a rune and paying the transaction fee for the seller. You talked about ways that runes could, you know, intersect with some covenants. So what are some of the more interesting things that you think we could see in the future?
Oh man, where do I start? There's so many cool things. This is like where the nerdy Bitcoiners have to think like a degen, because there's really some really cool stuff. So simply, when you create a runes transaction, it's a normal Bitcoin transaction with one output that says, here's the runes, they go here. You can create a transaction that other people can spend and pay for that transaction and then have themselves receive the rune. So this is an interesting proposal thrown out by Rindell Roth 13 Maxi of the Taproot Wizards, where you could basically use a rune as a transaction fee. So you could create a transaction that you want to send. Charlie sends Laura a little bit of Bitcoin. And then also there's a rune attached to it. Someone could, and I could construct that transaction that anyone could pay for it if they wanted, and you would still get the Bitcoin, Laura. So someone could come in and they basically take the rune bounty of that transaction. This is really cool. It adds a lot of weird incentive to Bitcoin. Some of it's scary, but it's very interesting because I've not seen anything like this on Bitcoin before. And then also there is this conversation going on in Bitcoin of soft forks. A lot of these surround this idea of adding opcodes to allow Bitcoin covenants. A covenant is a way to commit to using a UTXO or Bitcoin in a certain way going forwards. It's an important way for Bitcoin to scale. Because covenants affect Bitcoin itself, because runes maps very well on top of Bitcoin, these covenants could be used to add interesting complexities to runes. So it creates, like, finally an incentive for the non-technical degen to find one of these covenant or soft fork proposals attractive. A lot of what Bitcoin has to do in order to evolve and change is convince the majority of the economic participants that they want it to happen. And so what is the carrot dangling for the degen to support something obscure like OpCheck Template Verify? Well, I'm not sure. You see the Wizards doing it with OpCat. They're crafting a very compelling narrative of why we need OpCat. But for something like CTV, like what's the purpose? Maybe a degen says, oh my gosh, with CTV, I can do this, like this new runes technique. That's attractive. So it really, I don't want to say aligns all the camps of Bitcoin. It just gives everyone in Bitcoin more things to do and talk about. And that's what's so interesting about runes in particular. But you see this happening across the whole Bitcoin ecosystem right now.
Yeah. There's actually been a couple of other protocols that have been around longer than runes that are similar. One is Taproot Assets, and the other you mentioned, RGB. How do they differ from runes, and why do you think they haven't quite taken off?
That's a really good question. They're a little bit similar to runes in that they work naturally within Bitcoin's UTXO model. Taproot Assets is an additional way of doing fungible tokens within Lightning. I actually am quite optimistic about Taproot Assets. And RGB is an old idea on Bitcoin, which has been in development for forever, which is finally seeing the light of day, where it basically says we're going to freeze or lock these UTXOs and do off-chain or computation on the wallet side. What does that mean? Why have they not taken off? That's a great question. Why do things which are built well or built in a different way, why do they not take off? I think it's a marketing issue, timing issue, and a narrative issue. Maybe these different protocols didn't lean into the JPEG use case enough. As Udi Werthammer says, there's only been two real use cases for crypto, and that's stablecoins and NFTs. And so what Ordinals did is it injected NFTs into the Bitcoin conversation. We'd seen attempts at this. We'd seen Counterparty, which is popular, but it didn't really click. I think the NFT ecosystem last cycle was looking for something new. And it's just very path dependent. When Ordinals launched, it just grabbed its hooks into the NFT enjoyers, and Casey shepherded it very well. I think it brought enough novelty and freshness to the whole NFT story. I think that's why Ordinals is taken off. And then the rest is just kind of growing and sprouting out from around that.
Well, speaking of Casey, I heard him saying that he wanted to control the first rune that will launch with the first block. So he's creating something called Uncommon Goods. And I don't even know what to call it, because obviously there's going to be a series of these. So is it the first rune? What is it? The first rune series or...
Yeah, it's the first rune etching. So it's the first token.
Etching.
He just didn't want anybody else to claim it. Like, he has the first inscription. He has the first inscription ever. It's his. He came up with the idea. He deserves that. But I think it's also like he wants the protocol not to be co-opted by or dominated by any single person. So, you know, if you release the protocol, you could have some well-capitalized venture firm come in and get that first one. And they kind of carry the reins from an Monero standpoint of this new young budding fungible token protocol. So the real controversy is he actually proposed initially doing the first 10 because of like there's a novelty to having a single digit token. But he recently, as of yesterday, said it's only going to be one. And the reason, he couldn't think of any other good names. So Casey is he's more of a creative than a developer. He's just as much a creative as he is a protocol engineer. And I think that's why he's so lovable and why people just love to do stuff that Casey invents.
Yeah, yeah. And the name is Uncommon Goods. And I heard him also say that I think to start, the names have to be like 13 characters. And then eventually he'll allow shorter names. Well, this has been super fun. I'm very excited to see how the launch goes. Yeah, thank you so much, Charlie, for explaining it all.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Thanks so much for coming on Unchained. Don't forget, next up is the weekly news recap. Today, we're trying something new. Since I'm still on my health sabbatical, the recap will be read by Wondercraft AI. Stick around for This Week in Crypto after this short break. Did you know you can buy and sell crypto with tax benefits in an individual retirement account? iTrust Capital makes this possible. But what does this mean? When you buy crypto outside an IRA, like on an exchange, you face taxes on gains. But in an IRA, like a Roth IRA, gains can be tax-free. iTrust Capital also has some of the lowest fees in the industry and 24/7 accessibility. Start now and maximize your retirement savings with iTrust Capital.
Jury deliberates in Mango Markets, 110 million fraud case. The trial of Avi Eisenberg, accused of a $110 million fraud on the Mango Markets cryptocurrency trading platform, has been convicted. The guilty verdict could have lasting implications for both DeFi protocols and DeFi users, perhaps setting precedent for future cases. Eisenberg, arrested after manipulating the price of MNGO perpetual futures to illegitimately withdraw cryptocurrencies with inflated collateral, was found guilty on Thursday of committing commodities fraud, commodities manipulation, and wire fraud. He faces up to 40 years in prison. During the trial, the prosecution argued Eisenberg's actions were a clear case of theft. They highlighted his price manipulation from trading large sums between his own accounts to artificially inflate the value. But Eisenberg's defense, led by attorney Brian Klein, claimed that the trades were permissible on the Mango Markets protocol, suggesting that a lack of explicit terms of use allowed Eisenberg's strategy. In another DeFi case, a former security engineer received a 3-year prison sentence for the first ever conviction of hacking a smart contract involving over $12 million in stolen crypto. Hong Kong approves first Bitcoin and Ethereum spot ETFs. The Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission granted preliminary approval to 4 asset managers to launch the city's first spot Bitcoin and Ethereum exchange traded funds. China Asset Management, Bosera Capital, Hashkey Capital, and Harvest Global received approvals. Estimates on potential inflows vary, with some analysts suggesting the ETFs could attract up to $1 billion, predominantly in Bitcoin. Restrictions on mainland China investors, however, and the scope of Hong Kong's ETF market overall might limit demand, at least compared to the U.S., where Bitcoin ETFs have amassed nearly $60 billion. The Hong Kong launches are expected to positively impact prices by increasing demand and potentially tying up liquidity, mirroring previous U.S. market impacts. Senators introduce latest stablecoin regulation bill. Senators Cynthia Lummis and Kirsten Gillibrand unveiled a new legislative proposal aimed at regulating stablecoins, or digital assets pegged to stable currencies like the dollar. The bill specifies permitted stablecoin issuers and establishes strict operational standards, including requiring issuers to maintain dollar-backed reserves and operate as either registered non-depository trust companies or depository institutions. It also mandates full reserve backing with public disclosures. Notably, the bill would prohibit algorithmic stablecoins, which rely on algorithmic mechanisms rather than full collateralization. Crypto skeptic Senator Sherrod Brown expressed willingness to advance U.S. legislation on stablecoins, emphasizing the need for thorough regulatory scrutiny prior. Meanwhile, the United Kingdom is set to introduce new legislation by July that would regulate stablecoins, along with crypto staking, exchange, and custody services, aiming to establish the country as a crypto hub. Senators seek clarity on CFTC chair's ties to FTX founder. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Grassley have requested detailed information from Commodity Futures Trading Commission Chair Rosten Banam regarding his communications with FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried. The inquiry, following Bankman-Fried's conviction, aims to scrutinize Banam's interactions with Bankman-Fried during the critical months before the exchange declared bankruptcy. The lawmaker's letter demands that Banam submit records of all meetings, phone calls, and messages exchanged with Bankman-Fried by April 29th. This request is part of a broader investigation into how regulatory oversight may have fallen short in allowing fraud at FTX to take place. Rising tide of Ethereum, Layer 2s and wallets. Ethereum Layer 2 solutions and self-custodial wallets are surging. They aim to improve transaction speeds and cut costs. OKX, a major crypto exchange, has launched its X-Layer, a Layer 2 solution built using the Polygon Chain Development Kit. This platform allows OKX's 50 million users to interact seamlessly with Ethereum-based decentralized applications, enhancing scalability and privacy through zero-knowledge proofs. Simultaneously, WorldCoin, founded by Sam Altman, is introducing WorldChain, a Layer 2 network prioritizing human users over bots. This network uses retina scanning technology to verify human identities, offering faster transaction processing for verified users. Adding to the innovations, Kraken has rolled out a new self-custodial mobile wallet, allowing users to manage assets across blockchains. Notably, Kraken's wallet is open source, with its code available on GitHub for enhanced security through third-party reviews. Uniswap's fee hike sparks revenue surge. Uniswap Labs increased its user interface swap fee to 0.25% from 0.1%, resulting in a record daily fee income of approximately $727,000. This surge in revenue comes as Uniswap prepares for a possible legal battle with the SEC, which has issued a Wells notice to the company behind the decentralized exchange. Despite the financial boost, there's growing concern that the increased costs may drive users to alternative platforms. Already, there's a noticeable decline in unique traders, dropping 15% from 285,000 to about 241,000 shortly after the fee hike. This fee adjustment raises critical questions about its long-term impact on user retention and the platform's competitive edge. Bitcoin challenges Ethereum in daily transaction fees. In a significant shift, Bitcoin is increasingly rivaling Ethereum in daily transaction fees. Historically, Ethereum has led in fees generated, but recent data shows Bitcoin catching up, driven by the popularity of ordinals and BRC20 tokens. In recent consecutive days, Bitcoin's fees surpassed those of Ethereum, highlighting a rising demand for transactions on the original blockchain. This surge is linked to activities like minting NFTs and trading tokens, which not only bolster Bitcoin's transaction fee revenue, but also hint at its expanding utility beyond mere currency transactions. Bored Ape Yacht Club NFT prices plunge. The Bored Ape Yacht Club NFT collection has experienced a significant drop in value, with the collection's floor price reaching its lowest level since August 2021. Currently standing at 10.9 Ether, approximately $34,000, this represents a drastic decline of over 90% from its all-time high of 128 Ether in April 2022. Despite historically being one of the top NFT collections by sales volume, BAYC has not been immune to the broader downturn affecting the NFT market, raising concerns about the future interest and value of the once highly coveted digital assets. Meanwhile, BAYC creator Yuga Labs has been transferring royalties, totaling over $250,000 in the past 2 months, to a deposit address linked to the bankrupt entity FTX US, according to blockchain intelligence firms Arkham Intelligence and Breadcrumbs. In other NFT news, Blur led marketplaces in the first quarter with $1.5 billion in trading volume, capturing a 27.6% market share. Magic Eden surged in March, driven by new rewards and expanded offerings. And that's all. Thanks so much for joining us today.